Jesus said to his disciples, "As it was in the day of Noah, so it will be in the days of the Son of Man. They were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage up to the day that Noah entered the ark, and the flood came and destroyed them all. Similarly, as it was in the days of Lot, they were eating, drinking, buying, selling, planting, building, on the day when Lot left Sodom. Fire and brimstone rained from the sky to destroy them all. So it will be on the day the Son of Man is revealed. On that day, someone who is on the housetop and whose belongings are in the house must not go down to get them. And likewise, one in the field must not return to what was left behind. Remember the wife of Lot. Whoever seeks to preserve his life will lose it, but whoever loses it will save it. I tell you, on that day there will be two people in one bed. One will be taken, the other left. And there will be two women grinding meal together. One will be taken, the other left." They said to him in reply, "Where, Lord?" He said to them, "Where the body is, there also the vultures will gather." The Gospel of the Lord.
Praise to you, Lord Jesus Christ.
Near the end of Return of the King, the last of the Lord of the Rings trilogy, Sam and Frodo are on the way to the Mordor to destroy the ring, and they are near despair, almost out of hope. They've been hiking for months with little to no food and are now in the worst place on the earth. There's little sunlight, smog, smoke everywhere constantly. They're going to the enemy trying to sneak into the camp, and it seems utterly hopeless. They're trying to get some sleep one night, camping out under the sky, and it says that Sam, through the clouds, saw one single star. And as Tolkien does, he talks about the star for a while and just shares the beauty that occurred to Sam. The beauty pierced Sam's heart, and suddenly what was utterly hopeless, on the verge of despair, the beauty of seeing the heavens that proclaimed the glory of God allowed him to have hope. He could go to sleep with peace in his heart, simply seeing that there is beauty in the world. There is hope, and there is something beyond the despair that's made things good. Beauty is one of the greatest proofs of the existence of God. It's not subjective. There's something that in every human heart that recognizes the beauty in God's creation, and it points beyond itself. It points to the living God. When we encounter beauty, it's not just entertainment. It's not just the screen that gives us a little dopamine buzz. Beauty leaves us in awe. It leaves us wanting to reverence the mystery before us, that there's something so good, it's actually breathtaking. And I don't want to use it, I actually just am in awe of how good this is. Yes, the Lord made the heavens, he made the seas. As the first reading says, the beauty always reflects God, and as God was creating things better and better, the most beautiful thing he created was man and woman. God made us good. And we can boldly say he made us beautiful. As he made us beautiful, Adam's first encounter with that beauty, the beauty of a woman, his response was, "Bone of my bone, flesh of my flesh," the first love song, in effect. There was absolutely zero lust in Adam's heart at that moment, just totally in awe of the mystery of the beauty before him. So with us, God put beauty into our lives. He put beauty into our hearts and beauty into our bodies. We can boldly and honestly say he made man and woman beautiful. And that is good. Of course, we all know that can be twisted. Instead of the mystery of beauty, that God made us like that to be revered, to be honored, instead it can be easily twisted. It can turn into, instead of wanting to own the beauty of what God gave me, I want to twist it and just get attention. just get a dopamine blitz from looking at someone else with lust in my heart. God did not make us to say, no, don't look at all. But rather, when we see beauty, we should look towards God and say, God, you are incredible. When a young man actually falls in love, there's something in his heart when he thinks of the other woman that's actually, like, I can't even fathom thinking of using her. She's just so incredible. We're made for more than just, no, that's bad. We're made for more than using another person. God made beauty in our hearts. The most practical way I know to affect this, imagine a crown on the head of the other person. Imagine a crown on our own heads. All right, walking through, we can have the sacramental imagination. Just that person is a beloved daughter, a beloved son of God. And he did make them beautiful, absolutely. But that crown on their head just reminds us, they are a sign of God's beauty, capital B, beauty. He left the mark of his beauty in that person. And so I want to reverence, honor, and be in awe of that person and just recognize they are beautiful because God is the one who made them. So I want to honor them, not use them. Of course, if we're extremely tempted, we can just look away in that moment, but in our own bodies as well, we can just look, Lord, you've given beauty in my body. And so I recognize the crown you've laid there. All this is to say, the beauty God has left is because God is the most beautiful one. In his creations, he lives beautiful as well. When we come to the altar, God is so humble, he comes as bread. He leaves no trace of his beauty because he doesn't want us to be totally in awe and on our knees. We can't help ourselves how beautiful he is. But the living God in heaven for all eternity will be in awe of the mystery of his beauty. Now we enter into faith and we enter into gratitude that he has made all of his creation beautiful as well. The sky, the seas, and even us.